Key West Friday. Looking back on it, Scott Harveth probably shouldn't have punched the guy. Flipped him on his ass? Sure. Put his wrist into a painful yet harmless joint lock? Even better. But uppercut the guy so hard that he knocked him out cold? Not one of his better decisions. And therein lay the problem. Lately, Harveth seemed to be out of the good decision-making business altogether. Forget for the moment that the other guy had it coming, a wealthy Wall Street type. He appeared to take great pleasure in verbally abusing his female companion. The more the man had to drink, the worse it got. It was uncomfortable for everyone sitting nearby. What it wasn't, though, was any of Harveth's business. People got into relationships for all sorts of reasons. If she was willing to sit there and get berated by some jackass, that was her problem. At least it had been until she took off her shawl. The moment she did, everything changed. On such a warm evening, in the resort's open-air lounge, it seemed odd to be wearing a wrap. Then Harveth noticed her bruises. She had tried to conceal them, but to his discerning eye, they were unmistakable, running up and down both arms. Apparently, Wall Street could get rough with more than just his words. In Harveth's book, hell, in any decent human being's book, men who beat women were scum. Did this guy need to be taught a lesson? Absolutely. Did Harveth need to be the one doing the teaching? That was debatable. Karma would catch up with the guy eventually. It was one of those things from which you could run, but never hide. Nevertheless, Harveth felt for the woman. Maybe it was all the cocktails he had consumed that were talking. Maybe it was the amount of personal trauma he had unsuccessfully been trying to escape. Either way, the emotional and physical pain radiating from her was undeniable. And so when Wall Street next popped off, Harveth didn't even think. He just reacted. Standing up, he walked over to their table. Her problem had just become his problem. And Harveth's problem becomes the 19th in this series by Brad Thor, Near Dark, a thriller, we're told on the book's cover, and indeed it is. Scott Harveth, Super Seal turned Super Spy. He's tall, blonde, suave, and takes no prisoners, as I think you just heard. And after not a few outings on the bestseller lists and finding a home in the minds of millions of readers, I like that Brad Thor is allowing his iconic character, Scott Harveth, to age. And how it plays with the double entendre of the title, Near Dark, referring to both Harveth's deep depression after the recent loss of his wife, his beloved mentor, and a close colleague, and the story that unfolds in these pages. Harveth is jerked back to reality soon after that encounter in the bar when he discovers an unprecedented bounty has been placed upon his head by a murky international operator. The first assassin to take out Harveth, you see, gets a $100 million payday. That's $100 million. And the dark, shadowy life of international intrigue in which Scott feels more at home and to which his life, his soul is dedicated, erupts back to life. His memories of enthusiasm and work as a SEAL come through very clearly on just about every page of this book. Harveth rages against the machine that wants to take him out on these pages, raging against his being torn between the family, which he lost way too soon, his ultimate heart-wrenching willingness to let his in-laws take care of his surviving stepson, his continuing conflict between life as an independent operator. After all, we learned that he refused to take leadership of the company he had helped build, in which his mentor and former boss, Reed Carlton, had wanted him to assume leadership of, leaving that leadership to be shouldered by folks who were dedicated to the program, but not as invested in the company himself. The story? Harveth has launched into his latest caper, starting on those palm-fronded beaches of Key West, Florida. But quickly, our hero is snatched into terrain as far-fetched as Camp David, that retreat of the U.S. president, the bracingly cold beauty of Oslo, Norway, and the creaky old world, slowly modernizing city of Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania, perched precariously between a reawakening Russia and a strongly pro-NATO Poland. Well, Harvath's athletic abilities and sharp mind are in full display once again as he chases the bad guys and tries to ferret out the good in the good guys and the gals he needs to succeed. It's a page-turner of a romp, as we've come to expect, across the eastern U.S. and most especially of eastern Europe. And it's almost pure escapism that so many of us delight in reading. Yes, Harvath is a Superman of sorts, incredibly smart, incredibly alpha male, always locking away those bad memories into a steel box that he shoves into the back of his mind, as he puts it more than once. Yet he's also a dude, an American who understands and can operate with a somewhat warped but understandable moral compass that fuels his passion to fight and scheme for the right against the wrong, the just against the unjust, as we heard in that opening where he's standing up for a woman he doesn't even know, but he knows is in trouble. Harvath is an American hero that so many of us can relate to, and for all his faults as a human being, and he certainly has them, accepts his living and working in that murky netherworld made famous by Jack Nicholson's character vis-a-vis Tom Cruise in A Few Good Men. Harvath is Nicholson's Colonel Nathan R. Jessup without the bravado. Now, don't wait for deep dives into personality for these characters. That's not the point of these espionage action novels. That's probably not why you read them, not why I read them. And don't expect a kind word to be expressed about the Russians, the series' ongoing boogeyman. You won't read it. The Russians, in this book, as in so many Brad Thor books, are indeed evil players. Do be intrigued by the constellation of players here, players we don't usually get to read about in espionage novels, certainly not films. Norwegians, Lithuanians, post-Soviet occupation, and Poles. Their national spy networks are all portrayed as on the side of righteousness, read America. But as with all spy networks, they are infiltrated by bad players as well as good. It is up to Scott Harvath, of course, to sift the wheat from the chaff, with some help from the good guys back in suburban Washington, D.C. Two, we get an all-too-brief glimpse into that oddly Cold War province of Russian Kaliningrad, a real-life Russian colony wedged between Poland and the Baltic states and far northern continental Europe. You can find it on a map. And if you've always wondered, what is that place doing? Looks like it's kind of in the middle of Poland, and it is. Separated by Mother Russia, geographically, but a hive, as Thor tells us, of anti-Western skullduggery and military preparation. With the Brad Thor patented allusions to a backstory involving our Scott Harvath and the Lithuanian spy network he worked with on a particularly harrowing caper not that long ago in our story's timeline. A caper that, of course, is going to affect our current story, providing background, nemesis that Scott needs to fight against, and an ongoing U.S.-Russia challenge. The American presidency seems oddly placed in this novel. The president, fictional of name, of course, is clearly not the current occupant of the White House, as he is portrayed as firmly allied with our nation's spy networks, and more than willing to direct both U.S. CIA and Secretary of Defense folks to provide our hero with resources he needs to keep both Scott Harvath alive to fight another day and to get the righteous payback that Harvath and his superiors, or maybe they're more like his co-equals, seek to get accomplished. In that manner, our novel veers into fantasy land, much to its favor, I think. And finally, Near Dark is author Brad Thor after his own dark period, blaming Muslims for all the evils in the world, so blatantly prejudiced a period, I just could not finish a Brad Thor novel. Now, we're back to seeing the Russians as the evildoers of the world, an ironic, if comfortable, place for espionage fiction as written and consumed by so many Americans, including myself. This is not to say that all Russians are evil, that all Russians are bad people, but at least Brad Thor has returned to an element, to characters, to storyline that I think we can all relate to. Let's finish early in our novel when Harvath is pulled back into reality, when an assassin comes for him quite unexpectedly. Here's how Brad Thor sets up and gives that story. Harveth had no idea who had come to kill him. He made so many enemies over his career, could have been anyone, or any organization, just a random yoo-hoo. He had cheated death so often, though, that it was hard to believe it had finally caught up with him. He only hoped it would be quick, and that there was a heaven on the other side, that his wife would be waiting for him there. Straightening up, he turned to fully face his killer. The man holding the weapon stood about 5'10", so they were essentially eye-to-eye. He was slim but fit, with brown hair, brown eyes, and pale skin. His features were nondescript and of indeterminate origin. In a word, he was utterly forgettable. A quintessential gray man, if Harveth had ever seen one. He radiated an icy calm. His breathing was steady, and his weapon didn't tremble. Clearly, he was a professional and had done this kind of work before. There was nothing in his eyes, nothing in his face that signaled a motivation. No rage, no vengeance, no passion. He didn't look like someone Harveth had directly wronged. No, this was a transaction. Cold, detached, and impersonal. While Harveth wanted to know who had sent the man and why, he refrained from asking. He wasn't going to give the killer, or more importantly, his employer, the satisfaction. Besides, there was no reason to drag the whole thing out. If this was how his life was going to end, he planned to exhibit some modicum of stoicism. Might as well just do it and get it over with. Stopping just at the edge of the shadows, the killer maintained his distance, bolstering Harveth's assessment that he was a professional. He didn't need to come any nearer. He had watched Harveth fight and would know that getting too close could end badly. Better to stay where he was, take the shot and disappear before anyone knew what had happened. What's more, if he was a pro, he would have done his homework. He would have known that Harveth was too smart and too well trained to have risks sneaking up on him. Sending two knuckle draggers to lure him outside was smart. They'd probably been paid to beat him up within an inch of his life and take off before the cops got there. No doubt the two bruisers were expendable. Whether they regained consciousness and escaped before the police arrived was their problem. The killer had only one priority at this moment, taking out his target. In the distance, the klaxons of emergency vehicles could already be heard. The assassin was running out of time. It was now or never. As if reading his mind, the man took a deep breath, looked down the side of his pistol, and adjusted his sight picture. Harveth wasn't afraid to die. He didn't look away or close his eyes. In fact, he kept looking right on his killer. The assassin began to apply pressure to the trigger, and Harveth knew the moment it arrived, he braced for the worst. And then it came. There was a muffled pop, followed by silence. That was it. He felt no pain. In fact, he was still very much alive. How was that possible? Had the assassin missed? Had his weapon malfunctioned? A fraction of a second later, Harveth had his answer. Blood began to trickle from a hole in the would-be killer's forehead. And as he collapsed on the ground, Harveth realized the man had been shot by someone else, but by whom? Suddenly, four men carrying suppressed weapons appeared out of nowhere. Their faces were obscured by balaclavas and night vision goggles. What the heck was going on? Time to go, one of them ordered. Harveth instantly recognized the voice. Before he could reply, two of the men had grabbed him under their arms and were steering him toward a narrow gangway. Glancing over his shoulder, Harveth caught a glimpse of the other men swiftly unfurling a body bag and placing the dead man inside. When they emerged from the gangway, a dark panel van was idling at the curb. As they approached, the door slid open, and Harveth climbed in. The two men with him stood guard outside. It smelled like disinfectant. Second later, the other man arrived with a body bag. Once the corpse was loaded, everyone piled in, and the van took off. And as it did, the occupants began removing their night vision goggles and balaclavas. One by one, the faces of Scott Harveth's teammates were revealed. That's just from the opening of today's Knock'em Sock'em novel, a thriller, as our book cover tells us, Near Dark. Brad Thor, number one New York Times bestselling author, also told to us by a book's cover. It's quite a read. If you're into Brad Thor, if you're into intrigue and Knock'em Sock'em kind of novels, this is one for you. Brad Thor, Near Dark. Check it out at your nearest public library, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library. Thank you for listening.